That bass is hitting a little too hard this morning. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where both of the hosts had the same resolution, which was to eat less trash in 2019, and only one of the hosts was talking about actual trash. Joined today on New Year's Day by longtime friend of the podcast, real-life friend of both me and Lenny, Michael Jr. Welcome back, Mike.
Mina, glad to be back, and I appreciate the invite as always. I thought about coming into this with a major chip on my shoulder because Dominique Foxworth, other friend of the pod, IRL friend, beat me to the punch on being the third, first three-peat guest, but I realized that you were just getting him out of the way in 2018 because you wanted to start fresh and new in 2019 with the best guest possible. So I understand your methodology, and I'm psyched to be here.
I feel comfortable saying you are the best guest I've had this year, Mike. Absolutely. Did you do anything fun last night?
I bought a Nintendo Switch and played about 3 hours of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And, yeah, that was about it. I think I actually rang in my new year with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter, which is, I promise this isn't even corporate shilling. It's just sad.
I'm older than you. So, listeners, to let you behind the curtain a little bit before the show, I was telling Mike with great pride in my voice that I stayed up till 2 a.m., which I know you probably think Mina Kimes, huge party animal, rages so hard, always can be found in the club. But actually, I don't usually stay up even past 12. So that was big for me. Other thing, let you a little bit behind the show, the reason I don't sound as crisp, clear, the dulcet tones are not what they usually are, is having a little bit of technical difficulties. So this is a real power move for Mike, really, because I hate having my guests sound better than me, but today you are in studio and you sound great.
It's a major flex for me today. I'm pretty excited about that. I like to paint the image in my mind now that we've established that you were out partying last night, that you got home late and just took the unit that you usually record on and either doused it in beer or like rock star style threw it out a window and are just trying to cover up for it this morning.
I love the idea. Oh, I don't want to record my podcast. I'm going to throw this out the window.
Lynn is stealing my shine again. Not today, Satan.
2018 Mina punishing 2019 Mina. There's so much NFL stuff we could talk about with all the coaching hirings and firings, the Real Housewives of Pittsburgh drama, which is my favorite storyline of the year. It's, again, not a lot of competitors early on. But I said this on Twitter, you might have missed, but I'm going to keep this podcast going all off season every week, so there'll be plenty of time to talk about the coaches and all of that great stuff. But we've got some wild card games to talk about, some good wild card games. Mike, I believe you can really make a case, I think, to pick any upset in any of these games, and the lines reflect that they're all pretty closer than usual. I don't really foresee any major blowouts, which means there's going to be at least, you know, one gigantic, boring game.
Well, 100%, but I'm willing to take that, you're right, with the rest of this bag, because it's a great mix of, like, future Hall of Fame quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks that are on the rise, teams that made big moves, Nick Foles again showing up in the postseason picture, which is starting to become a weird trend that we have to keep an eye on. But there really is, like, a lot of great matchups across these games, too, which is awesome.
And so Jay Cutler, in a very predictable fashion for anyone who's followed Jay Cutler's career, decided to take New Year's Day off. So I am going to do my best impersonation to intro these games. Are you ready?
Dear God.
Colts at Texans. Colts at Texans.
It gets somehow worse every day. Is that what you think men sound like?
You think someone who is primarily around men would have a better sense of male voices, but the only male voice I do is DMX, which is also Yoda, which is also Cookie Monster. I could have done that.
Oh.
Anyways, let's get to the game. So before we talk about the Colts, I think we need to take a moment to acknowledge that we haven't talked about the Colts. In fact, every like non-major market team thinks that they're overlooked by the MSM, but the Colts really do have a case. And look, you started 1-5, so that you dug your own hole. But I do think they are the true underlooked team. And we have a Colts fan. The only Colts fan I know, to be honest, is the producer of this show, Tarika Foster. So I'd just like to give her a minute to gloat about her team making it to the playoffs. Tarika.
Yeah, you know, I actually have a few people who I need to just, you know, throw under the bus a
little bit. Name
them
names.
Oh, yeah.
I'm dropping names.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to do the Stu Gott style, okay? All right. First on my list is my buddy Will Kane. Said we were going 4-11, buddy. 10-6.
Oh, wow.
How does that sound?
What up, Billy?
10-6.
Ooh.
All right.
How'd that taste?
How'd that taste, okay? Second, my girl Mina Kimes.
Ooh. Oh, no.
My girl Mina Kimes.
On my own podcast.
My girl Mina Kimes said our defense was questionable. We're top 10 and haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher all year.
Look, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Top 10 in DVOA, too.
Let's get it. Okay. All of audio, ESPN audio, all of you laughed at me when I said we were making the postseason. There you go.
Get him. Get him. I love
this. All of that said, guys, I've got four words. I told you so.
I've enjoyed today, too, because Tarika's been putting out all the positive vibes in the world. Said, I don't know how, but I'm going to this playoff game.
I'm going.
Just speaking into existence.
I am putting it in the atmosphere that I will be on a plane to Houston this weekend.
So I want to first talk about the defense, Indianapolis defense going into this game, because as you correctly mentioned, they are a lot better than people thought. They finished the season actually 8th in weighted DVOA, which is skewed towards more recent games. It's interesting, Mike, to think about them versus the Texans defense. Really, actually, both of these rosters are so different in how they're constructed, because the Texans roster, which is really racked by injuries and that's affected them and will certainly be a hindrance on both sides of the ball, is kind of like a Stars and Scrubs roster, right? Like you've got Clowney and Watt, but then there's so many weaknesses, and I'd say the same applies to their offense as well. Whereas the Colts defense is full of these unsung heroes. Now, we hear Darius Leonard's name a lot, but really you've got guys who are contributing who still aren't stars, and I think it's kind of added up to something that's bigger than the sum of its parts.
Absolutely. I think, and it's so interesting because I believe Matt Eberflus was one of the coaches that was brought over when the whole Josh McDaniel thing was going on, right?
Yes, and he's, I've heard him actually thrown out as a head coaching candidate, which it seems a little bit early to me, but hey.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, when you get a defense to outperform like that, I think it's sort of the Matt Patricia effect that we saw for so long in New England, when you're able to take a defense that seems to be devoid of a traditional superstar outside, obviously, of Darius Leonard, you get a little more credit for something like that. But just this coaching staff in general, the way it was thrown together like that, Frank Reich was obviously the second choice after Josh McDaniel, but the way the defense has come together, like a guy like Jabal Sheard, who I remember, you know, he was in college when I was at Notre Dame playing against him at Pitt, has showed up and flashed a lot. Like, they're just guys that find a way to make enough plays to get it back to an offense that, I know we talk so much about the nature of offense in the NFL this year, but the Colts ball control offense has really paired well with a defense that needs a little bit of extra help. It's not like it's the Bears team that's getting the benefit of that, or this Ravens defense that, because of Lamar Jackson's ball control, gets extra juice for a unit that's already stacked. Like, the Colts defense legitimately needs this help, but it gets it from an offense that's decided to go a completely different route.
Yeah, I think people think of the Colts, they think of Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton and these explosive passing plays, but you're right. They can actually really grind out these long drives behind that offensive, the blocking of that offensive line, which we have. Yeah, which, again, they're an underlooked team. Tarika was right. But I do think that the offensive line being as improved as they are has been a major narrative this season for good reason. And it's why you see, you know, Marlon Mack, who I think is a really underrated back, by the way, in terms of breaking tackles. It's why they're able to do that on that side of the ball. The defense, while better than expected, is imperfect, okay? They're a lot better at stopping the run, in part because of Darius Leonard, who's the one name people really know. They're a lot better at stopping the run than the pass. And I think when we look at this matchup, I think about the Texans, and I don't know if you heard last week, Dominique and I did, I don't know if you listened to the competition, you know, just to scout it out, but you might have heard last week Dominique and I gave New Year's resolutions to these teams, and the one I gave for the Texans was stop playing like it was for Bill O'Brien, stop coaching this team like they're a team with a good, very strong defense that can run the ball, because they're not. And I can't imagine a matchup where that applies more than this game, right? Because the Texans run offense, rush offense has been really inconsistent. This is not the game to run the ball, okay? Like, if you want to beat this Colts defense, you got to unleash Deshaun Watson and you got to let him throw.
I'm so glad you said that, because I got really tired in the middle of the season when teams like the Cowboys and the Colts and the Texans were getting lumped into, see, you can win in the NFL with great defense and a running offense. Like, had anyone actually watched the Texans at that point was my question, because they were living a lie if that's what they believed their offense was. The offensive line, again, and part of this is certainly Deshaun Watson, a guy who is inclined to try and make big plays down the field because he can, holds onto the ball a little long sometimes, but I think he's been sacked near 60 times this year. Like, it's an offensive line that still hasn't really been addressed in the way that would show you value protecting your quarterback. I mean, it's a lot like what Andrew Luck dealt with for a long time.
62 sacks.
Oh.
Fifth most in NFL history. And look, a lot of that is on Watson. And then if you watch, you know, he holds onto the ball too long, okay, a lot of times, and he takes a lot of unnecessary sacks. But a lot of it is also on both the play calling and the offensive line, which was subpar going into the season. It shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone. If you watch the last game of the season, was really interesting for me because there were so many designed runs for him, and it was excruciating at times. But at the same time, you see why it is kind of their red emergency button to generate offense, because he's incredible at it, okay? And he does these miraculous things, and you see why they do it, but he takes so many unnecessary hits, and it's so frustrating. Now, I don't think the fact that they did it in this game, in which it, again, at times felt deeply unnecessary, means that they're going to hit that button in the playoffs. But I just wish they, you know, Bill O'Brien and the Texans off, like, they didn't lean on it as much as they do, because Deshaun Watson can throw, you know? And again, I know that they've got injuries, and outside of Hopkins, it's a bunch of question marks. But I really, really think if Houston's going to win this game, they're going to win it on Deshaun Watson's arm.
No, I'm with you. And it's the dangerous place we get into, because we've got a lot of quarterbacks that have great running ability right now, but they're not all created equal. I saw you and Field Yates tweeting before some unbelievable stat about Russell Wilson and his just ability to stay on the field constantly through his career as a guy who still, I think you said, behind Cam Newton since he came into the league, leads in rush attempts, right?
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with the way he runs and the slides and the way he's built. And that's why, like, you know, Cam's missed, he's been injured lately, but he's missed only 6 out of 128 starts. I just pulled that up. That's because he's built like an Autobot. Okay.
Yes.
and Cam Newton's more likely to hurt a defender than the defender is likely to hurt Cam Newton. And that's just, arguably Josh Allen is built that way as well. It'll be kind of interesting to see that play out, but yeah, look, and the way he runs at times is terrifying.
Oh, it is, because,
you know, he seeks out on that.
Well, and he's closer to makeup-wise, because you're right. Like, one of the interesting things when it comes to the combine is some teams I've heard have started to measure joint size, like joint thickness, as a sort of precursor for measuring the susceptibility of a guy to injury. And so when you look at Russell Wilson, it makes sense. He's thick in the hips, thick lower body, all these different things that would help you out in that situation. And then you've got a guy like Deshaun Watson, who's built a little closer physically to Lamar Jackson as far as their stature, a little taller, a little more slender, but he's nowhere near as athletically gifted as Lamar. I mean, Lamar's got that Russell ability to take hits off of him because he's so quick and he's so much more athletic than you that he can get down, that he can make it a glancing blow, where I just don't think Deshaun has that innate rushing ability, so trying to force that square peg into a round hole is going to end up being dangerous for him.
Yeah. It is really, a lot of it is in like the angles, right? And Lamar still does take some unnecessary hits, and we'll get to the Ravens offense at the end, but there's something about Watson that's just, man, it makes me wince, I suppose. On the other side of the ball, I guess, you know, Andrew Luck has inarguably been one of the hottest quarterbacks in the NFL over the back half of the season since week 7, he ranked second in QBR to Drew Brees. It was interesting watching this final game, though. You kind of saw the best of him. You saw he still got that zip on the throw. You know, that was a concern earlier in the season. He makes these incredible athletic passes, but he does make risky decisions. And I think you really saw that in this final game against Tennessee. I mean, I don't know if you caught the pick six, the jump pass, like right by outside the end zone. Like that's the thing that Andrew Luck does. And so how do you feel he matches up against a Texans defense that's very strong up front and very injured in the back?
Yeah, I think he matches up really well for that reason. Like you said, like the Colts are weirdly built to withstand what the Texans do best up front. And it's not just, you know, personnel wise. And I'd be the first one to give credit. I know I bring up Quentin Nelson whenever I can because he's a Notre Dame grad. And certainly for them, probably the biggest thing to watch, you could say T.Y. Hilton on the outside, but I think just as much Ryan Kelly is still a guy that's questionable. Their starting center, Evan Baum's been playing for him. He's been injured the last couple of games, I think with a neck. But that one going into the game is probably one of the biggest things, because not only personnel-wise up front has it been such a change, but just the way they attack game plan, you see so many max protect looks in addition to some of those quick run pass option throws that Frank Reich wants in this offense. And I just think it's made such a world of difference. And when you're going up against a front like that, it prevents a lot of those situations. I mean, all that defense wants to do is scheme one of those guys into a one-on-one matchup where they can win. And it just clouds that picture enough to where Andrew Luck's got time. Like, part of the reason I think he threw that pick six is because you looked, he was so comfortable inside that pocket. There was pressure starting to bear down, and he still had all the confidence to sit in there and try and make a throw he shouldn't, where maybe another guy tucks it and just eats a couple of yards. Maybe a guy rolls and bounces out. Like, that level of comfort that he builds when you go five or six games without a sack or even being touched is, I think, such a unique advantage for them going into this particular matchup, because we've seen when he's got time and if T.Y. is just healthy enough with that ankle, they can get downfield and hurt you bad.
I just rewatched it. He pumped twice for the jump pass. If that's not comfort, I don't know what is. It kind of sounds, okay, so just to grab this, it kind of sounds like you're leaning Indianapolis.
Oh yeah, I'm picking the Colts. I don't, and it's not just because Tarika is staring at me right now from the control room, but I've told her on different occasions, like, I've fallen weirdly in love with this Colts team just because, I don't know, A, like, Andrew Luck's personality and his childish giggle is infectious and I can't get enough of it, but also, I think just seeing a player that we expected so much out of and seeing an organization respond to all the criticism. The criticism for so long with the Colts was you never put enough around this guy to protect him and sometimes protect him from himself. And we've seen him improve in that aspect, and we've seen the team around him and Chris Ballard really improve this roster in that way that I've just enjoyed watching it gel together. Like, I think it's a really... It just enjoyable brand of football, maybe for a former offensive lineman as much as anything. But I've fallen weirdly in love with this team.
And Mina, what Mike won't tell you is that he also does not want to stop seeing the Captain Andrew Luck tweets. So
100%.
Well, maybe it's because I'm not face to face with Tarika right now, and not forced to endure her withering eye contact. But I'm going to go Houston for just a couple reasons. One, the first reason is Deshaun Watson. I just think he's been unbelievable this year. And the second reason is Indianapolis really got screwed, man. Playing a night game and having to go on the road for the first game of Wild Card Weekend is just not the best. So I think that, you know, if I'm going to have to give a slight edge for a reason, I would go there. All right, let's move on to Seahawks at Cowboys. Worse, right? That was even worse.
I thought that one was getting better. I felt like you had more confidence in that one, basically, because it had the Seahawks in it.
I lost it at the end, though. You know, I started really strong, as I so often do in life, and then I lost confidence towards the end. So this is another one where I see, even more so, I think, than the first matchup, where I see a lot of, like, don't you think these teams are really similar in a lot of ways? Are you, like, just looking at the rosters and their strengths and weaknesses?
Very, and that's why I spoiler alert, I know we're doing picks at the end, but I haven't fully formulated it yet, but I lean Seahawks because they seem like mirrored images. One team just has a really much better quarterback.
And a better coach, I'd argue. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's 100% right. You know, Seattle is such a weird team. especially because like there are all these sort of narratives about them that I think are untrue. Like the party line on them right now is, wow, they're a team that is, they'll beat you because they're amazing at running the ball and they have a good defense. That's not really why they beat teams. They beat teams because of Russell Wilson, and the defense isn't great. Now, running the ball plays into that because it keeps that defense off of the field and it keeps Russell Wilson upright in more situations. And I think the offensive line, which is really responsible largely for a lot of the improvement this year, the god, Mike Solari, shout out, it plays a big role in that as well. But, you know, they're kind of fluky. So Ben Baldwin, friend of the podcast, writer for The Athletic, tweeted this about the Seahawks defense. And tell me if this surprises you, Mike. They're the third worst defense in expected points added per play on first and second down. This is outside the red zone. They're the second best defense in expected points in play on third downs, and that includes the red zone.
That is shocking only because, like, when you think of that swarm-style defense and just how downhill they play, it seems predicated on those, you know, obvious third-down chances. And I don't know, maybe outside of Frank Clark, like, I don't think of one obviously great pass rusher on that D-line, but maybe that's a, you know, my relative lack of familiarity compared with your own, but that does seem shocking.
Yeah, so Jaron Reed, defensive tackle, has been really, really good at generating pressure on the inside from Alabama. Super underrated draft pick, it's looking like. But, you know, the Seahawks defense has been, actually they rank first in the league at sacking quarterbacks on blitzing downs, and they've been good in the red zone. So, you know, it's that formula. But really, Mike, I think you could argue that the Cowboys defense is better.
Oh, I think it is to a man. And I don't know, the Cowboys defense to me sort of operates like the offense just with better personnel across the board. Like, you've got such an athletic upgrade at linebacker. Sort of the criticism we had of offense of them, quite frankly, was you were so unathletic at the skill positions, and specifically we know Jason Witten retired, and as open as he always was on third downs, he wasn't a guy that necessarily separated all that well. On defense, you really upgraded at those spots. I mean, Heath's been great at safety this year, but Vander Esch and Jalen Smith at linebacker have really been the story for that defense. Like, we knew what DeMarcus Lawrence was, but those two were kind of the wild cards, especially when your stalwart and Sean Lee goes down.
Yeah, and that's going to be obviously such a key in this game with Seattle as committed as they are to running the ball. LVE, Leighton, did get a little hurt in the last game, and he was kind of struggling a little bit here and there. You know, you kind of saw a little bit of a downturn overall in the Dallas defense at the end of the year. Not quite sure. I mean, they gave up 441 yards to the Giants, I think nearly as much to Tampa Bay, so and a ton to Philadelphia too. So there was a little bit of weakness at the end of the season. So while I still do think better than Seattle, they struggled a bit. But that's going to be, you know, those linebackers have sort of been the toast of the NFL, are going to have, and Sean Lee has also struggled immensely, I think. They're going to have to play at a very high level against this Seattle team. I think Seattle's offense is better than Dallas, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think it's especially better, again, because, like you said, it's so much of it has been on the playmaking ability of Russell Wilson. Like, as all of the things have improved, and you see, like, I give Schottenheimer and Solari credit, like, they still do a lot of the things that this offensive line did in the past. Like, a lot of their play action is built off zone movement, trying to get Russ moving, and then they end up being almost that, like, New England half roll where he still gets to set in the pocket, but the O-line gets to run and hit, and you know, I don't know how much better to a man they are across the board, but all of this has helped and benefited. But you still see so many instances where Russ ends up having to buy a little extra time and make a play, usually to Tyler Lockett. I still didn't have a perfect passer rating to Tyler Lockett during this season. It's been an unreal connection.
Absolutely bonkers, yeah. So, it does feel like the offense, which is, you know, play action super effective, the run game is efficient. But it does feel like they're too off lean on these like insane miracle deep balls from Wilson. Absolutely. I guess I just, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say I have a lot more faith in him than in Dak, who was inexplicably played the entire last game, even though Zeke and Tyron Smith sat and he was playing behind a pretty haphazard offensive line, but hasn't really been connecting with Amari Cooper over the last month. I don't know if you noticed that. You know, he came on so strong after the trade, but he's kind of disappeared a little bit in the last games. And Dominique and I talked about how to beat Amari, you don't want to play man, which Seattle, you know, primarily does play more zone, but that's where you see guys like Cole Beasley shining more. So I'm not quite sure, even if Seattle blanks Amari, I'm not quite sure that's going to be enough to negate this Dallas offense.
Yeah, and the thing I worry about is you mentioned a lot of the inconsistency down the end of the season. I think we're tied to injuries up front. Like, the thing I think, and it's weird to say at this point, that Dallas's offensive line probably got underrated compared to what they actually managed to produce, especially once they got towards the middle of this season. And Amari came over, and it certainly helped a lot in those spots, but I think you saw that group that had been banged up. We know all the things that happened with Travis Frederick, and Tyron Smith's been injured a lot the last couple of years. Zach Martin finally gets dinged up. But when that group, even with Joe Looney at center, had really started to get a chance to get a lot of reps on the field, that old formula had kind of started to work again. And they're a different team when Zach especially is out there healthy. That was sort of the capstone the first time around when this unit came together. But I really think if he's on the field, and, you know, it sounds like, again, you know, they rested him just to kind of take care and make sure he was ready for this playoff game. That rushing attack really scares me still, and it's not something I expected to say coming into this year.
Yeah, and look, Dallas obviously finished the season stronger, I think, than Seattle, or both teams won, but Dak had a really, for him, I think it was, even though I was frustrated with the fact that he played, it was, I'm sure, very heartening to Cowboys fans to see him finish with a great performance like that. Meanwhile, Seattle, basically, again, even though they also won, laid an egg against Arizona, but I really pin a lot of that game against the Cardinals and their performance in it and the offensive struggles on the fact that the Seattle offensive line was completely mucked up. DJ Fluker, who's been quite a bright spot this year in terms of free agent signings, was not playing. Jermaine Ifedi had moved inside to right guard. Ethan Posich, who has been really not great, was in. So I think that you kind of throw that game out and
Seattle, what about you?
I was leaning with you the whole way, and then I looked, like, when we talked about Zeke kind of having, like, and I mentioned this run game had a sort of resurgent season. Zeke Elliott won the rushing crown in the NFL. Like, he had 1,400 yards rushing, or 1,434 rushing yards. He was the leading rusher in the NFL. I think that formula is going to end up being enough if they've got the full complement. I think I'm picking Dallas.
Ooh.
I hope this doesn't affect our friendship.
At odds. Game after game. No, it's good. I, you know, embrace debate. All right. Take a quick break and take some questions.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
So, guys, as always, if you leave a nice iTunes review and a question in that review, I will answer it. And I am getting into the November question, so we are getting closer to catching up, which means fewer and fewer questions, you know, about whether the Steelers will make it to the playoffs and that kind of thing. All right, Saprissa Siempre asks, based on your personality, what position in the NFL would you play? Also, Lenny. I really want to hear what you think about this, Mike, because I actually think I would play offensive lineman. I think I would be a guard. Because, and here's why. So, again, this is based on personality, obviously not, you know, size and such. But I am really, like, I'm a very technique-driven person. Like, I really love, like, process, okay, and execution. And I'm really into following the rules. The rules are really important to me. I'm not, like, the kind of player who needs to, like, freelance a lot. I don't know. And I'm, you know, maybe a bit more cerebral person. So I'm going to go offensive line.
I think I'd agree. And, like, a really strong communicator, like a team player enough to share the title of the podcast with your dog. Like, that's the kind of selflessness you don't often find in other position groups. So I'd be comfortable saying that. I'd say, like, that profile all reeks of center to me, too. Like, cerebral, technician,
center.
Maybe a little bit undersized, but ultimately really effective when it comes to directing traffic in the middle. So I'll give you center, yeah.
I didn't want to do center. I feel like that would be too much of a flex. So I'm gonna, you know, I'll take it. Yeah. Lenny is a cornerback. I don't think I even need to explain why. The Incredible Hawk asks, can you imagine a universe where Philip Rivers plays out his career in Dallas? Do bolo ties become more trendy? Funny he asked this back in November before I had started my current hobby of painting Philip Rivers, which you can check out on my Instagram. And I recently painted him with a bolo tie, which somebody replied to me, he would never wear a bolo tie. He's from Alabama, not Texas. And I replied, it's based on a photograph. He does have like a real Texas vibe to him. But no, he's obviously going to finish out his career with Chargers, I think. T-Rose Broncos fan, a lot of interesting spelling in this one, asks, is a hot dog a sandwich? That age-old question. Yes. C. Schneids. Ooh, this is a good question. I really want to hear what you think, Mike. Are there any NFL QBs where Bama could beat them if said QB was playing with the roster of their alma mater? So, for example, he says, if Bortles was UCF's quarterback, Trubisky was at UNC, Winston back at FSU, Mariota at Oregon, Mahomes at Texas Tech.
So the question is, with that quarterback at their alma mater, would Bama beat them?
So it'd be like Bama playing UNC, but Mitch Trubisky's the quarterback. I absolutely think Bama would win in a lot of these.
I think Bama would win in a ton of these. Like, the most obvious one to me seems like Josh Allen. Like, you put Josh Allen back at Wyoming, and Alabama's absolutely going to stomp them into oblivion.
Who's a team where they would beat, of the ones, where they would beat Bama if they got their NFL quarterback back?
I don't know. I'm going with Auburn and Cam Newton.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, because it's more about the roster than the quarterback, right? Because Mahomes is obviously the best quarterback of the bunch, but Texas Tech wouldn't, even if he was there, I don't think they would beat Bama. So,
no. I remember Cole Kublik brought this up to me. Look at the roster that Cam Newton won the national championship with that year. I don't think a single guy played an NFL snap on that offense.
Wait, really?
Besides Cam Newton, I don't think a guy on that offense played a single snap in the NFL.
Who are the Georgia alums in the alumni?
That's a good one. Matthew NFL. Stafford.
Okay, they might beat Bama then.
I can say they almost did it with what's his name this year with.
Clemson with current Deshaun Watson would probably win, right? Maybe.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Final question, Jim Brownski, a.k.a. Carrie D., so interesting decision, ask, who plays Aaron Rodgers in the story of your life? Don't know why Aaron Rodgers is in the story of my life. I guess there's a scene where I'm interviewing him, and obviously it's Michael Ryan. All right, so moving on to the first Sunday game, we've got Chargers at Ravens.
That's the wall-to-wall confidence we've been looking for.
All right. Well, speaking of wall-to-wall confidence, this Ravens team, I don't know, are we overhyping them right now? Because I made a joke about this, and too many people took it seriously that I had to delete it, but I used a bunch of cliches to describe the Ravens, and I was like, they're the team no one wants to play. They're the team that's built to win, and, you know, but those things might be true. I mean, let's just start out this way. Who do you think should be favored in this game?
I think the Chargers, if they've got all the parts that we know have been kind of up in air towards the end of the season healthy, I think if Eckler and along as Melvin Gordon and company, and I know the Hunter Henry thing's become a thing now, but I don't really take as much stock in that. Like, if everyone's healthy, I think the Chargers should be favored.
Really? Okay. Well, let's talk about the Chargers first then. So obviously, you know, I mentioned that the Colts have to go on the road after a short week. The Chargers, we know, thrive on the road, right? They're 7-1. They beat Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and Seattle on the road. And there is that whole, it's easier, you're not going to beat a team twice kind of factor too. So I guess all of which to say, I don't really put a lot of stock in situation in this one in the same way that I did in the Colts game. But the Chargers offense has not been great the last few weeks. And as much as I love to paint Philip Rivers, he truly tailed off as an MVP candidate towards the end of the season. The last month, the last four games, he's 21st in QBR, 26th in passer rating. They've really been held up, I think, by their defense. Are you concerned about Rivers, or do you think that's just a product of the fact that, you know, they played the Ravens defense and then they pitched against the Broncos? Or do you, but they're playing the Ravens defense again. So how concerned are you about sort of the downturn in the Chargers offense we saw?
I am a bit concerned, certainly. I think I was more concerned, too, on the other side with just how not dynamic Lamar Jackson looked against that pair of ends that we know was the big selling point on that defense. Like, when you've got a mobile quarterback, especially one that's going to be involved in as much read option, having Bosa and Ingram on the other side is the biggest feather in your cap, and that still didn't feel like enough. But for Rivers, I guess I keep falling back on, like you said, just this idea that if you give a quarterback of his caliber a second look at a defense even that great, like, he's not going to go out there and light it up and throw for 400 yards against this Ravens defense. No one's is, but it's not going to look as anemic as it did on that Thursday night game. Like, that was where his MVP candidacy died, was that Thursday night game against the Ravens.
Yeah, and in that game, it felt like Eric, a little bit of Eric Weddle, like knowing Philip Rivers and that kind of thing, and the Ravens defense seemed to have his number. So, he's a smart quarterback. He's been in the NFL a long time. So you do think, you know, he would make and Anthony Lynn, as well, they would make the necessary adjustments. And I think it's so important for them to start fast on offense, which my resolution for the Chargers, which Philip did not listen to going into this Denver game, was that he needed to be better out the gate because he's been really, really bad in first quarters. And that's not just over the last two games. That's been a problem for the Wild, not just with interceptions, but just generally they've had these really slow starts on offense. And I think the key to beat Baltimore, and this is frankly, you know, pretty obvious, is you got to score first. You want to bury them, right? You cannot let them dictate the pace and tempo of a game, because this Baltimore offense, this Baltimore team, we know, is a boa constrictor. They'll squeeze the life out of you. So you got to put them behind. And based on how the Chargers have performed recently, I think that's an issue because, you know, they just haven't been doing it. And I love watching this Baltimore offense do it. By the way, I know I just called them a boa constrictor, but it's funny. People call them like an old school team, right? And I think that is more just a way of thinking about it in the context of the current NFL and what's been going on with offenses and this sort of the shift towards passing. But there's nothing old school about this rushing offense. They're really creative and fun to watch.
Well, no, I mean, it's principles from college offenses that, quite frankly, it was stuff that I didn't think would work as well, but it really showed me just how athletically gifted Lamar is. Like, there's all this stuff, like, certainly for the offensive line, it has made life infinitely easier just because going forward's always going to be easier than going backwards. But you're right, it's super creative, but the way that you beat it still ends up being, and I don't mean this demeaningly, because obviously a lot of people have taken shots at Lamar Jackson's passing ability, which I think are ill-formed right now, given the way they want to run that offense. But the way you beat it is the way you beat, like, a triple-option Navy offense, which is you get up on them early, and you make big plays, and you force them out of what they want to do much quicker than they're ready for in a lot of this. And so, yeah, I think that's the real key to it. That's why, like, Big Mike Williams' game. Like, he's been a guy, 10 touchdowns this year, obviously a freak in the red zone because of his size, but he's been someone that's come on so strong after that injury-riddled first season last year where, you know, we weren't sure what he was really going to be. That's what it's got to be, because you're right. If you give the Ravens a chance to possess the ball and wear on you, that's going to break any defense.
And the challenge of going up on the Ravens is, you know, second only to the Bears defense, which we'll talk about shortly. They're so much better than every defense in the NFL. And Wink Martindale, call him by his given name. What he's done with this defense is just incredible. I mean, and you really saw it in this Browns game. I mean, and I think I should have predicted it more. They didn't even really get home that much on Baker, but he was so confused by their coverages. It's something they've been doing all season. It's so murky and so difficult to read. And, you know, again, we do think Philip will be better this time, but they are I don't really – like, what's the weakness in this Ravens defense if you had to pinpoint one? Marlon Humphrey had a bad game against Cleveland, but that's – I'm not going to call him a weakness because he's been great otherwise this season.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the thing is, like, you're not – like, you mentioned Eric Weddle before who, you know, maybe a guy who's getting older but also, like, has that benefit of all that information at a spot where communication is paramount. I know C.J. Mosley made the big play, but he's another one of those guys when you talk about the ability to confuse and direct traffic. Having a linebacker of his caliber who had that pedigree, even coming out of college, like what a perfect marriage for a defense that demands intelligence at the linebacker level. And then up front, I mean, Terrell Suggs is the ageless wonder. Brandon Williams is an absolute fire hydrant in the middle of that defense. Like, I can't find one.
Yeah, I don't. It's a difficult challenge for any offense, much less Chargers offense that, while loaded with weapons and Melvin Gordon should be playing, if not, you know, entirely healthy, has struggled a bit sort of down the line. You know, the Chargers, but we haven't talked about the Chargers defense. They're great. You know, they're a top 10 defense, I think, by most metrics. I last week talked about, you know, I singled out Jahlil Edeh and he again struggled. So Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa have been a little bit quiet down the stretch, I'd say. 26 in adjusted sack rating since week 10. So I look at this Chargers defense and I look at what the Ravens offense is doing and what we've been discussing and the creativity and the execution from that offensive line. And for, by the way, side note, during this Ravens, this is extreme tangent, but I know it'll be very important to you personally. During this Ravens Browns game, I wrote down the tight ends names, not as pass catchers, but as blockers.
Oh,
They've really used them well.
Mina, they have got an absolute unit full of these guys. And I think that's what makes them, when you talk about all the factors that have certainly played to Lamar Jackson's strengths at this point, we always talk about a tight end being a quarterback's best friend, especially a young one, but yeah. As versatile as this group is, because you can window dress it. I mean, Mark Andrews, I think, was the Mackey Award winner his senior year at Oklahoma. Williams was another guy that was a really high pick. Hayden Hurst was a first-round draft pick, and all of these guys, the billing on them was, whether it's Andrews who comes from an offense that majors in tight end deception or Hayden Hurst, who I thought is a super willing blocker, like you never know what these guys are going to do. And so when you see them all stacked on the end of the line of scrimmage, when you see them hipped there, they're a threat to do everything in an offense that's really, I think, at its foundation predicated. You talk about being new school. It's getting your eyes in the wrong place. Like you see all that fly motion. You see Lamar Jackson as a runner in the box. Like every bit of it is supposed to be deception with simplicity up front and a quarterback that's just better and more athletic than everyone you've got.
Yeah, and I think the tight ends are also incredibly valuable because Lamar's still much, much better middle than he is on outs, which is an issue he had in college. And it's right, you know, he had in college. Those are really nice ball of the scene. So I'm kind of leaning Ravens after this conversation. What about you?
I think I'm leaning Chargers, and I know you mentioned start fast on offense as a New Year's resolution for them. On defense, I would say it's also like you have to turn Lamar Jackson over at some point. Like you've got to find a way to get that ball out there. You've got to steal a possession from an offense that wants to do that. So I'd say that start on defense. Like you're right, Ingram and Bosa haven't been as effective sacking the quarterback, but in this game, I don't really think that matters as much as trying to find a way to get home in the run game and really jar that, like make them think twice about his safety in the run game.
And that was my resolution for Lamar, Mike, for this last game, and was ball security, and it again was an issue against the Browns. He had the fumble at the goal line and then at the pitch at the end, you know, so that continues to be an issue with them, and you got to see a defense, I think, that's laser focused on exploiting that. All right, last game. Eagles at Bears.
Mina, that was by far your best one. And I think it's because we've got two particularly fierce mascots.
Yeah, I was channeling them. And I also, you can't see this, but I was making like a really gross face as I was saying it. And I think it was one of those things where like I was channeling my physical appearance into my voice. So thank you. I really appreciate that. Gross mascots, fierce mascots. I think this could be a really ugly game. Like, I don't know. I just, I, so this is the most lopsided matchup, you know, according to Vegas, and I think that's fair. But I could also see it going either way. I could see a lot of weird stuff happening in this game. And, you know, let's start by talking about the weirdest team in the playoffs. Is that fair to call Philadelphia the weirdest team in the playoffs?
Oh, by far.
Yeah, because I don't know, right? With Nick Foles, who was okay in the last game. He wasn't great, you know, but he's definitely been good enough. It's funny though, like we're talking about Foles and attributing a lot of the Eagles' success at the end of the season to him when it really is about other players as much and if not more. And to me, watching the Eagles, what I was struck by was just the return to being kind of an inside-out team. There's a team that just wins in the trenches on both sides. And you saw, you know, Fletcher caught Michael Bennett, that defensive line looked like they did last year. Michael Bennett wasn't on the team. But then you also saw an offensive line look significantly better. You know, Jason Peters, Lane Taylor, who's going to be very key in this game against Khalil Mack, and Jason Kelce. Like, they just looked a lot more like they did last season.
They did. I think now it's interesting because I think in the game against Washington, Fletcher Cox had 3 sacks. And when I look down the stretch of the season, like Fletcher Cox on the interior has been the difference. Even when they were going, you go back against Dallas, who I talked glowingly about their offensive line, like Fletcher Cox was giving everything he could handle to Zach Martin in that game and got home and got pressure a few times in that. He's such a difference maker on the inside, but this is also a Bears team that I saw the other day. Someone from Pro Football Focus tweeted, this is a Bears offensive line that's given up the fewest pressures in the NFL. Now, part of that is certainly an offensive line that I think is improved, but it's also Matt Nagy and this offense have schemed it in such a way where you're not putting them at risk as much for that. And you're not putting as much of that on them for a young quarterback and Mitch that we know can make guys miss with his feet, but you know, not even giving up pressure like that to me is also the nature of this offense as much as anything.
Now, it's no secret that the weakness of the Philadelphia defense is the secondary, which has been, you know, destroyed by injuries. Although they look better in recent weeks, Russell Douglas and Avonte Maddox corners have looked better. A lot of that is because the defensive line is so good at getting pressure, which always means the secondary's best friend. But this Bears offense is not built to exploit the secondary, right? And the Eagles are still, their whole front seven is still very strong. Linebackers are better. And that's going to be, that is the key, I think, to stopping the Bears offense. So, listen, I think the Bears are going to win. We'll talk about sort of the Bears defense later, which is the biggest gap of talent in this game. But who thinks that the Eagles defense could give them more trouble than they expect?
I think they could, but at the same time, like, I don't know, when I think about all the things, especially because you talk about the D-line as such a strength, like, to me that reeks of also some of the places where the Bears have done really well all week. Like, that could be it smells like a big Tariq Cohen game to me, like a guy who's a mismatch at that level, who's big in the screen game that takes the edge off a lot of that stuff. Like, there's such a side-to-side defense that you're going to have to account for that more so than I think most teams, just because that's really a tenet of, like, this Matt Nagy, Andy Reid offense. It seems like the Bears' offense has enough answers in that short area where, yeah, exploiting down the field is certainly the best spot, but they also raise holy hell with those, with especially Tariq Cohen, I think, around the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and I think, Mike, as hard at times as I've been on Mitch Trubisky this season, and you know, he's been up and down to me, I think he's really finished strong, especially in this last game against this Vikings defense that was trying really hard. And without Allen Robinson, he was really impressive to me. You know, again, he doesn't make like a ton of super difficult throws, but he keeps the chain moving. He's shown better decision making. He had a really nice pass to Taylor Gabriel that impressed me. It was a great throw. And so I think that he's not going to put this offense on his back, to use a cliche, but he's enough for sure. And like this defense, I just want to read you one number as we wrap up this game. So earlier I talked about how the Seahawks were like last in expected points added or something on first and second down. So overall, over the course of the season, when you look at defensive EPA, the Bears are first, unsurprisingly, with over 100 points the next closest defense to them is the Vikings, surprisingly. I would have thought it would be the Ravens, with 49. They are so far and away better than every other defense in the NFL right now. And I think, you know, the Ravens have kind of caught up towards the end of the season, have doubtlessly improved, but they're ridiculous. Okay, so as much as I can talk myself into Nick Foles and this offense being better and the offensive line being better, this Bears defense is so much better, I think, as a unit than anything in Philadelphia that I cannot pick the Eagles in this game.
No, I think I'm with you there in good conscience. And it's funny, like, a great matchup for this game is going to be on inside. Like, Brandon Brooks, surprisingly enough, for all of the pub that the Eagles offensive line got last year, we kept pointing to guard as the weakness. And I think Brandon Brooks is the only Pro Bowler on the Eagles offensive line this year at guard. So, really interesting matchup there with the guy who, I think somehow, as much as he's been talked about this season on the Bears defense, and you're right, at every level they've got studs and they've got so many names that have become household names for us. You know, Eddie Jackson's the turnover monster, Roquan Smith, Khalil Mack, like, all those have been the names. Somehow Akeem Hicks still feels underrated to me. Like, somehow I feel like we don't talk about what an absolute animal he is. So that matchup is probably going to go a long way in this one. Like, he is the inspiration for, I think, my favorite quote about football and offensive line play, because he was with the Saints when I was down there, and Zach Strief, who was a longtime defensive offensive tackle, for the Saints, said this about Hicks in practice, because he's a completely different guy when he gets on the field. One of the nicest guy, like, you know, a Canadian, went to university up there, all that stuff. But when he steps on the field, it was my favorite phrase. It was, you don't get bonus points for blocking a guy when he's mad. And, like, that's who Hicks he is. Like, when that guy gets mad, he literally hulks out and becomes, I think, outside of Khalil Mack, like, the biggest problem up front for this Bears defense. And we know the premium on interior pass rushers and interior players, I think, in general in the modern NFL. So it's just my Akeem Hicks rant. I have watched this year as he has just airlifted guys at times inside and been absolutely terrified by him.
I thought you were going to say your favorite quote about Akeem Hicks was me saying Hicko mode, but that's cool, too. It's a good story. All right, last segment of the show. It is to go.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Let's start out with the obvious question. Number one, what's your New Year's resolution?
My New Year's resolution is an old saying that we used to have in the locker room when I was at Notre Dame, which is take care of the people that take care of you. I want to make sure I see more of my friends in the new year. I got a lot of friends that have young kids, and I want to make sure that I'm around and I'm their favorite fake uncle.
That is so nice and makes me feel bad about mine, which is just drink more water.
A great one, though. Like, very worthwhile.
Coaching carousel is huge right now, and we're not really talking about it right on this podcast because we've got the games to focus on. But if you ran a team right now, any team in the NFL, looking across the field at some of the names, who would you hire as a head coach?
Wow. Who would I hire as a head coach? Man, if I had my pick of any of the guys that were on the market right now,
yeah,
I would... You know what? I don't know if I have one for, like, my team, but I have this, like, weird fascination in my head with Adam Gase right now, just because, like, I have these, like,
really?
I have a weird fascination with Adam Gase and with the Cleveland Browns, because I see, like, these other names getting floated around, and I heard Mike McCarthy, and I cringed, and it kept me up at night as a potential fit there. Like, Adam Gase still, like, I think what happened in Miami was such a weird outlier because of all the circumstances going on there, whether it's Tannehill never being healthy or all these weird locker room problems. And it creates my favorite scenario, which is a potential reunion with Jarvis Landry, who we know there has been a little weird public, you know, I shouldn't say public spat, but I saw Jarvis Landry tweet something when the news about Gase's firing was there. So you talk about the Real Housewives of Pittsburgh, like, bringing that with Baker Mayfield's edge to Cleveland is weirdly fascinating to me.
I started to actually go around the idea of Bruce Arians for the Browns, keeping Freddie Kitchens being the necessary factor, but that I do love the idea of a Gase-Landry reunion. This is a random question, but I revealed on Katie Nolan's podcast that I had never ever seen the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and I just pretend like I've seen it in every conversation. I was wondering if you had a movie like that where you pretend like you've seen it, or like a movie you're ashamed that you've never seen.
I recently lifted the veil of shame off of this one, but it was in, like, you get this in our job with sports movies especially. I've never seen Hoosiers, and I have zero desire to see it.
I've never seen Hoosiers either, and I've lied about it so many times. Feels so good to be honest in 2019.
I mean, who wants to watch a movie about a bunch of guys who are forced to pass the ball? Like, that's not the offense I want.
Question four. Where will Leonard Fournette play next year? Speaking of drama, so much drama this week.
It's been unbelievable. Like, to hear a GM come out, or whatever Tom Coughlin's title is down in Jacksonville, come out and say those kind of things about players on the roster, and then for them to do the thing, like, remember when everyone was up Roquan Smith's you-know-what about him going after all that contract language? Like, case in point here.
It's so bizarre because I just don't, like, what do you get out of that, you know? Like, I guess if they wanted to cut him and they didn't want to pay him, they wanted to use a loophole, then they had to publicize the reasons for doing so, but man, that's going to turn off a lot of players, you got to think. I just think of Jalen Ramsey. Leonard Fournette's one of his best friends on the team. I mean, I just, everything about this situation is just doesn't seem like a great place to be right now.
No. To answer your question, though, I could see him, and I know that Le'Veon Bell has been the name most people associate with this team, but when I think of the style of offense they run and just the versatility of some of the guys already there, I think he'd be a really interesting look in Indianapolis.
Ooh, I thought you were going to say the Jets. That's interesting. I don't think Leonard Fournette's better than Marlon Mack, so I'll push back. But but Fournette's had a really bad year. A lot of, like, their offensive line is a disaster in Jacksonville, so I don't think he's entirely to blame. But I don't think he's going to make a lot of money wherever he goes. We'll see. So maybe he'll sign like a 1-year deal or something and try to prove it. I don't know. It's a tough one down there. So for Lenny's question, I've gotten some listener feedback that they find his voice very shrill, so I am going to read it in my own voice instead, but I continue to take feedback, and if you miss his voice instead, please let me know. This is not coming from a place of shame. I am not ashamed of my dog's beautiful voice, but I do listen to feedback. So, final question, Mike. This is from Lenny. It's not in his voice, but know that where it's coming from. Mike, big fan. Love your work. How much would Notre Dame have lost to Alabama?
Ooh. How cruel is this? We're in a soundproof room here, and I could hear Tarika cackling in the other room when you asked that question, Lenny. And by the way, let me be the first to put my response into the complaints box here. I already miss Lenny's voice in this because it somehow makes it feel less hurtful.
Yeah, I know, right. Okay, well, that's one piece of feedback taken. I'll listen to others, but answer the question.
I realistically, with how healthy Tua looked, that was the scariest part. I would probably say it would have been, if Notre Dame lost by, I think it was 27 to Clemson, it probably would have, God, Notre Dame people, I'm giving, turn away. I want to save what we have. It's special, and I care about all you. We'd have lost by 40 points to that team. It's just a worse matchup. Alabama's offensive line is great. That was the one place that Notre Dame could really exploit on Clemson. I'm still so scarred by the entire weekend. Why couldn't Oklahoma just lose big like they were on track to? Why couldn't they make it look like it was a normal thing to happen in the semifinals? I'm sorry. This has been a long time coming. This is like therapy.
It's fresh. Lenny, he has a devilish smile on his face. There's nothing he loves more than, you know, sticking his paw into a fresh wound. That's a really gross image, but you know what I mean. Mike, best guess of 2019. I'll say it.
Strong start, guys. Strong start.